We only have Andrew Zimmern for the balance of this hour, so I thought we'd go to the phones early. And then coming up next hour, it's the Body Language Handbook, how to read everyone's hidden thoughts and intentions. We'll talk with Gregory Hartley, who's the co-author of the book and a man with a lot of U.S. Army and Special Forces experience when it comes to judging whether or not people are lying or not, and what else he can learn from body language. He has also translated that military experience to the business world, and so we'll talk more about what you can see, what you can learn to pick up just by looking at the people with whom you are speaking, and we'll do that with the Body Language Handbook. You'll have all of those mysteries revealed coming up next hour. Also tomorrow night, by popular demand, I did a open line segment a little while ago, and I think every time I've done one in the last a couple of months, somebody mentions either on the air, off the air, or in an email about the smiley face killers. Can we get an update on the smiley face killer story we had been tracking? There is one. And tomorrow night, as I understand it, I'll have on both the original reporter who'd been tracking this story of a presumed serial killer or killers that's working along the I-94 corridor across the upper U.S., pretty much from the Midwest out to the East Coast. And we'll talk about some very specific cases along the way, in particular one from Michigan, where, again, it seems almost certain to experts that a boy, a college boy, had been another victim of the smiley face killer. However, the local attorney general is saying, nope, suicide or accidental drowning. Not so, says a retired medical examiner who's looked at the same records and said absolutely not, and can prove the local coroner wrong. Also, I believe there's going to be a former federal agent who's gotten involved in the investigation, and we'll talk about that coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. And then back with Andrew Zimmern of Bizarre Foods on the Travel Channel in just a second. I want to ask him how close he's come to cannibalism. You go into some of these remote places around the world and people bring to you their favorite dish. What dish has Andrew had to push away from and just say, morally, I can't eat that? I'll find out coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Bizarre Foods with Andrew Zimmern, and it's fifth season? Have you shot your fifth season yet or sixth season?
Yeah, well, here's the interesting thing. Because the Travel Channel had me do a monster 30-episode season last year that we shot, and because they divide their seasons into two sort of 10-episode sessions twice a year, I believe that the show that I just shot in Buenos Aires 2 weeks ago was like the 65th 1 hour that we shot for them. And we have another 20 that we're doing this coming spring, summer, fall that we're shooting. And those are just the ones that are scheduled. You know, I think everyone is assuming that this will go on in perpetuity. People, we love doing them. It's the job I've wanted my whole life. I'd like to be making this show for another 20 years. And so as long as people are digging it, we're going to keep making them.
That brings me back then to the cultural question of last hour. We were talking about not refusing food and yeah, appreciating everything about yourself, learning about your sort of Americanism through all of these other experiences, and learning to be an international person and having, you know, this anthropological experience, which I fully endorse. But at some point, I mean, hasn't somebody offered you, have you ever in any of these cultural travels run across cannibals or somebody that was eating something whose origin was so dubious that you could not sign on for trying?
Well, I've refused two things in the show, one of which was made it on camera. The other one didn't. Not for any other reason other than, you know, the videography and the lighting just wasn't, you know, in the place we were wasn't, you know, good enough for us to weave it into the story. Neither one of those things was very shocking. One was a raw poultry intestine. The other one was a water in Delhi, India, in a horrific slum where somebody was making a small little snack and moistened the dish with water coming out of brown water coming out of a pipe that, you know, was basically busted inside a building. And I knew in both cases that eating them would, you know, was a guaranteed trip to the hospital.
Right.
And, you know, I'll play Russian roulette, but not with a fully loaded gun. We were going to go shoot in Papua New Guinea last year, and for a variety of technical reasons, never made it. And down there, there is cannibalism is practiced by certain tribes. We're going into the Amazon next year, and down there, there are some tribes that do practice some forms of cannibalism. It's very fast disappearing. The world is becoming so flat and becoming so modernized. And, you know, I mean, there's only a handful of – I've been in some of the most remote places in the world, and you still see jet contrails. It's getting to be that it's hard to get away from civilization enough.
How about human?
That's a line I won't cross. I mean, I shouldn't say that out loud. I mean, there's
E. coli and cannibalism.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just something I'm not going to do. Although, if I was lucky enough, like Jerry Seinfeld or Johnny Carson, to know that my last episode would be my last, maybe I would, you know, we'd fade to black as I'm about to eat my own hand or something. But other than that, I have no plans on doing that.
I think I would have eaten my own hand rather than the fermented fish heads. I would have preferred that. But
still not the worst thing I've ever eaten, though, my friend. Still not the worst thing there. I would rather eat a stink head than eat some of the exotic fruits that I've had that are so mealy and so just texturally horrific that I just can't even think of putting it into my mouth. Yeah.
Exotic fruits.
If you give me ammoniated, spoiled seafood, I can handle that flavor and texture better than I can others.
Oh, God, how bad must the fruit be?
Oh, my God, just grainy, gritty. It's like, you know, Vaseline with sand in it. And you know, it's just a horrific, horrific sort of putrefied vegetable flavor. Rotting vegetables have a worse taste in your mouth, or rotting vegetable matter has a worse taste in your mouth than rotting meat and or seafood does.
An insight I hope never to have.
And
which one's worse? I'll take your word on that for the rest of my life.
It is. I'm giggling at this. What a unique perspective I have.
Yeah. I mean, that's you are one of the few people who could say, you know, rotting vegetables are actually worse than rotting fish.
It's true, though. And you know, I mean, and I've seen some crazy things. I mean, we're just in Mongolia, the country that is, I think, has the most people living off the grid of any other country in the world in terms of percentage per capita.
Right.
And, you know, they thought that the way they cook a lamb there, because there's no wood, they have no trees out on the steppes. So everything is cooked over animal dung. And so when they kill a sheep, they essentially cut its head off, they bone it out by reaching their arm in, and they leave all the blood and meat and guts inside the animal, and then they pull certain big bones out so it cooks faster, and they sew up the neck where they have made the incision to get in there, and they just roast it over a dung fire until the skin is burned off, and then they eat it. And I sat there on the floor of a ger, which is technically what everyone mistakenly calls a yurt, with Dashka and his family eating this thing, you know, just all getting all messy and sheep fat dripping down your face and all the rest of this kind of thing. And everyone, my cameramen, are just looking at me with a horrific, you know, stare. And
yes,
out comes the putrefied cheese product and the fermented horse mare's milk. And you know, they just looked at me and they said, "How did we end up here?" I mean, I just remember Luke, you know, my videographer, right, looking at me like, "How did you end up? How did we end up here? Why do we always end up on the floor of some yurt?"
Yeah.
Eating, you know, sheep head and drinking fermented mare's milk.
Well, see, that's what I'm worried about, too, that someone's going to slip you some sort of human blood soup, even if you don't end up knowing it. That there's a certain amount of these cultures where they may not identify properly what it is that they're actually eating. And I was just curious.
If you think for one second that I would willy-nilly just be gobbling things up without that's like reaching your hand into a basket of jelly beans in the dark. You have to know which ones are grape and which ones are licorice, and you know, you've got to know.
Okay, so then you investigate every dish you're going to eat before you eat it.
You know, I'm a dad. I owe it to my son to return home safely from the trip. So I investigate. Investigate sounds like a very complex process, but I mean, you know me. I mean, unlike other people who are presenters on TV, I've been in the food, you know, gig since I was 14 years old. And you know, with the amount of experiences that I've had just on the show alone, I've learned to be very not cautious, but I always know what I'm eating. Always.
Let's get a couple of calls in, and I've got some more questions for Andrew Zimmern. We'll start with Nicholas, who's in Mississippi on a wild card line on Coast to Coast for Andrew Zimmern of Bizarre Foods. Nicholas?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. You're talking with Andrew. Go ahead.
How you doing now? I'm from Mississippi, and from listening to what you say, I guess chitlins and some chicken liver will probably be dessert for you.
Yeah. Chitlins, you know. Nothing. Chitlins, heck.
Yeah, I know, right? But yeah, I was saying, you know, what do you think about chitlins for the rest of the world that doesn't know about it? And plus, you can also do a whole show on Des Mississippi alone, because we eat every piece of the pig. There's plenty of gas stations or convenience stores that have pig feet, pig lips.
You bring up a really good point, Nicholas. The shows that have been the most popular in the Bizarre Foods, you know, file are the domestic shows. And we actually shot in Mississippi on the coast on our Gulf Coast show. And it was just absolutely fantastic. And we actually did our chitlin segment in Mississippi. I'm nuts for the food down there. And the lady that I spoke of before, Miss Letha, in, you know, her barbecue place in Hattiesburg is famous regionally and to barbecue freaks around the country. It's interesting, you know, what you said about chitlins, because, you know, in almost every show I have some kind of intestine. And chitlins, by the way, for those that don't know, are animal intestines that have been, you know, cleaned out, poached, and then, you know, pan-fried, usually a little bit of bacon fat down there. And they get crispy and delicious. And I'm a huge fan of intestines, as long as I happen to favor them crispy and yummy. Doesn't change the flavor of them. It's like wanting to make sure that your turkey has got crispy brown skin instead of a poached and or boiled and bland version. And I was just in Mexico, and I had the best chitlins, essentially, that I ever had that had been steamed and then marinated in lime juice and then griddled until they were absolutely blackened and crispy. I had a version on the Navajo Reservation in Monument Valley in Arizona a couple months ago that was, you know, second to none. And the ones that I had in the backyard of this local sheriff in Hattiesburg that's in our Gulf Coast show was, you know, in the top three of my chitlin experiences. And I think it's one of those dishes that when it's done the right way, people would love it. Unfortunately, most people don't cook it the right way. And there is a right way and a wrong way to cook an animal intestine.
Yeah. And I've had chitlins, and my mother was from the South, and she didn't care for them. So we didn't have them very often, but we had had them when we would visit, you know, our kinfolk and stuff. And
were they well cleaned out, or was there still a bullet in the chamber?
No, there wasn't. So it was good. I mean, we had them at a restaurant, and I was glad that I thought they were okay. It wasn't anything I craved, but you had that same, I mean, we mentioned Mississippi in that context, but when you did Los Angeles and you did Maine in Bizarre Foods, they both LA, metropolitan LA, and good old fashioned sort of Pepperidge Farm like Maine, they had some pretty bizarre foods too.
The most bizarre, and you know, the Gulf Coast show, Alaska, you mentioned, we did a New York episode, we did a Wisconsin show, we did a Minnesota show that your son was actually in. You know,
he still gets recognized for that on occasion.
The domestic shows that we've done, I mean, wait till people see the Arizona show. It's going to absolutely blow their minds, some of the stuff we experience. And I think what's interesting for Americans is that, because they are our top-rated show, the top-rated bizarre food show of all time is the Appalachia show. The Minnesota, I think, is number three. I mean, I think three of the top six episodes are all domestic. People are so shocked to see that just in their in their own backyard, people are observing food traditions that they never had any idea existed. I think it's fascinating.
Let's get to Brenda in Old River, Texas for Andrew Zimmern on Coast to Coast. Brenda?
Hello. I'm a little nervous, so forgive me. But I have a story, and then I have a question afterward.
Got to be quick if you can.
At West Texas, us grandchildren always went to my grandfather and grandmother's farm. And I was always a kind of a tomboy, inquisitive. But I knew something was up. It was like hush-hush, something secretive all day. And this wasn't spoken about in front of the grand girls. It was just the grand, you know, the boys. Well, I snuck out of the farmhouse that night because they all disappeared, all the boys and my grandfather. I went out to the pen, and they was evidently the castration had already happened.
Sure.
But I went out to the pen, and they was all standing around a fire, and it was dark, and the moon was out. It was kind of like a warlock convention, you know. I was only about in the second grade. I'm 53 now, and I, you know, peeking through the boards on the fence. Well, I didn't see them eat, but I just seen that, you know, and they were, I guess, cooking the mountain oysters.
Sure.
And so I snuck back in the house, and still it was hush-hush, and I couldn't get anything out of anybody for probably another week or so, and all I could get was always having mountain oysters.
Right.
But I don't know. It was like taboo.
Sure.
You know, with the girls. And I know it wasn't for lack of food, but it was just with the boys. Is that just a tradition, a delicacy, or?
Both. And here's the thing, that scene that you just described is played, I've experienced that, played out all over the world, most notably, I mean, we've eaten that dish in, you know, the balls off different animals in many different countries. And in Chile, we had the Mapuche Indians, the indigenous Aboriginal tribe that was most prevalent in the middle section of what's now the country of Chile. Every spring, in an effort to sort of tame the animals and to also reduce the bad bulls from or lesser bulls from joining up with the cows in the pen, they would snip the animals, and then all the farmhands would celebrate spring by eating the testicles. They would cook them with chilies and hot chilies and garlic and olive oil, sort of pil-pil style, on a plowshare that was put over an open fire, and they would use that plowshare as a pan, frying pan. We've experienced this in many, many different places, and like eating snake penis or other, unique parts of different animals in traditional tribes all over the world and traditional peoples all over the world, and these traditions have been handed down even into mainstream Texas a generation ago, believe that by consuming certain parts of a certain animal, you're consuming their strengths, et cetera. And it is a very – these sort of rites of passage meals are very much – I mean, we do the same thing with Thanksgiving, really, when we roast a big turkey. I think it's extremely charming, and I love the idea that this is still going on. In our Texas show, we experienced a lot of that, especially out in the wide open spaces of this country and in other countries in the world. Like Darwin said, when you have these islands, the traditions are preserved with a greater for a longer time than they are in places where there's a lot of crisscross and a lot of homogenization of cultures.
Okay, I'm going to take exception with something, and I want to hear what you have to say about it coming up just a second. I get what you're in the direction you're heading in when you talk about turkey as a symbolic food, in this case, a symbolic food of family, of gratitude. But I don't know how that necessarily translates to virility. And so I think her story is very interesting, Brenda's story about the consuming of bull testicles, or for that matter, as you did in LA, chicken testicles or something. I mean, some rooster thing. But I want to ask you about that coming up. Explain, after you've gone to other countries and you've seen their virility rites, what that has informed you about how we do that that traditional ritualistic passage into manhood with foods. What are the foods we use to accomplish the same goal. Coming up next with Andrew Zimmern on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Well, and Weird Al, they're getting pretty close to the Andrew Zimmern slogan. If it looks good, eat it. That's the philosophy that he takes into Bizarre Foods with Andrew Zimmern. But, you know, when Weird Al mentioned something about, you know, grab an egg and beat it, he wasn't just talking any kind of eggs. You ought to see some of the disgusting eggs that Andrew Zimmern has eaten, including half already, I mean, like embryos inside the egg, but not just like little embryos, even like whole little baby chickens and say, I don't even like to think about it. Anyway, but his DVDs are out. You can find those online easy enough. Andrew Zimmern, Bizarre Foods, heading into another season coming up, and you can always see the reruns of the past episodes on the Travel Channel. We'll get to your questions for Andrew Zimmern next. If you go online at coasttocoastam.com, you can link up to Andrew Zimmern from there. Also, take a look at the blog for tonight. Interesting story about the origins of The Wolfman, the original movie, The Wolfman. It had a lot more to do with Nazi Germany than most people think. And I'll tell you more about that there on the webpage. And coming up tomorrow night, we'll get that update for the smiley face killers you asked about. But next, more of your questions and comments for Andrew Zimmern on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. We were just talking with Andrew Zimmern before the bottom of the hour break about the things that are considered foods part of a ritual passage into manhood. We were talking about Rocky Mountain oysters. Some people do that. I will ask you, though, honestly, in terms of our rites of passage, or, you know, our coming of age foods in the United States, we really don't have the kinds of things that they rely on ritualistically in other countries for that expression, do we?
No, it's disappeared so much. I mean, you know, in the last couple of generations here in this country, we've mechanized and supersized our food system to such a great extent, and we've removed ourselves from being connected to our food source. And that's a statement that's made a lot by foodies these days, and they very rarely give really good examples. I think it sort of confuses people. But, you know, even if you think about eating with the seasons or practicing locavorism and things like that, there was an ebb and flow to our food life dictated by nature in the days before the supermarket, where, you know, the family farm really meant something. Slaughter certain animals in the spring and grow vegetables in the summer and put them up in the fall and, you know, right, try to last through the winter. And, you know, you'd cure your pig legs and into hams, and, you know, you did certain things, you know, and that's why we eat spring lamb in the spring and hams at, you know, Easter and other sort of traditional foods, because those were what were around. And it's a, you know, pumpkin pie means fall because we used to eat with the seasons and locally in the areas of this country where pumpkins are grown in a way that we really don't anymore. The rest of the world is still doing that. You know, America is the only country on the planet where shrimp are conventionally sold without their heads on them.
Yes.
We're the only country in the world where, you know, we eat the center of every animal and discard the rest or grind it up into unmentionables and call them hot dogs. You know, this is something the rest of the world, you go into a butcher shop, they still have butcher shops, and you can buy pig's feet and tongues and, you know, pork bellies and, you know, hocks and, you know, all the rest of that kind of thing. You can't do that anymore here. And the entire world is still eating snout to tail, and in our country, you can only do that in San Francisco, L.A., and New York in expensive restaurants, and people call it a food movement. It's a very, very strange sort of predicament. At the very top of the show, you talked about, you know, in a very fascinating way that the bizarre foods are disappearing. Every time we do a show, I speak with, you know, grandmothers in other country whose kids are, you know, want nothing to do with the traditional foods. And I think these things are disappearing in the other parts of the world where they're still prevalent. And I think the point of our show is not to, you know, bring back the horse and buggy. But I think what we can do is we can learn from studying these foods and learn from those times when we kept our food life more in perspective and ate a little bit more out of necessity. And I think that that's at its very genesis one of the things we try to do with our show.
You know, I what you're telling me here is that there's going to be a time that, you know, someday in Thailand, they'll all be saying, you know, now you can go out and buy wasp larvae any old place, any old time. It used to be something special. We had our wasp larvae season, but not anymore.
Do you know something? You're absolutely right. I was up in the hills of Pingling tea fields outside of Taiwan, four or five hours away in Wulai, and we were up in the mountains, and there's still Aboriginal peoples up there that eat a lot of bugs, and one of the area is famous for its honey, and we were in a small town, maybe population 4,000 or 5,000, and we were in a little sort of like truck stop cafe, and fabulous stir fries there, and we ordered one, and it was made with bumblebees, and the crew had half devoured it before they realized what they were eating, because the legs and the wings were plucked off, and it was a stir fry that, had you put chicken or pork or beef in there, everyone would have said, wow, this is some of the best Chinese food I've ever eaten, and it was some of the best Chinese food anyone had ever eaten. But they just used a local protein source that was renewable and sustainable. And I think we can learn a lot from those types of experiences. You know, in our country, we're, you know, we eat salmon, tuna, and shrimp, and you know, halibut, and they're all overpriced, and we're overfishing them. And the rest of the world is still eating little 1 and 2 pound fish with the heads on it. And I think that we can diversify our food source. I'm not saying that people, you know, in New York City need to start eating bumblebees, but I think the degree to which we go back to choosing from dozens and dozens of proteins instead of the same 3 or 4 is the degree to which that will help restore our planet as well. I think I'm PETA's best friend. I really do.
Okay. Well, I will happily defer to you that distinction. And I just know that someday in Uganda, they're going to say, remember when we used to use traditional drumming to eat our white ants? And now you can get them at a Dairy Queen. White ants are everywhere.
Wasn't spectacular drumming those out of the ground?
I loved those. I thought that was great. Don is in Salem, Oregon, west of the Rockies for Andrew Zimmern on Coast to Coast. Don?
Boys, Andrew, you have a great show, man.
Just thank you.
You know, outstanding. Back in the mid-70s, I went to what they call a game feed. It's where all the hunters, the gatherers,
sure,
the fishermen, you know, brought all this stuff in. I had black bear, I had donkey, you know, the frog legs, the rattlesnakes, all that good happy stuff. My ex-wife made me sleep on a couch for a week because it permeated out.
Now, works through your pores.
I got to ask you a question, Andrew.
Yep.
Does your wife prefer you take a shower, or she uses a pressure washer, or have you drink a bottle of hydro?
Pressure washer. I like that.
Thank you, guys.
You got to hose the boy down.
Oh, my God. You bring up such a good question. My wife is a meat and potatoes, you know, gal from you know upstate Minnesota, and so she doesn't understand what the heck I do or why I do it. And you know, I come home and from my 2-3 week trips abroad, and the suitcases that, you know, get dropped into the laundry room on the way in the door, and yes, I go right into the shower, and it's usually I get a peck on the cheek, and then 2 days later she starts talking to me again. And everything she's learned that you know, I need to get everything sort of out of my system and re-enter the family before I get the huge embrace. But yeah, it's kind of curious. She, you know, she and my son watch the show on TV, and they just can't believe what Daddy does for a living. Kind of shocking.
Tanya is in British Columbia for Andrew Zimmern on Coast to Coast. Tanya?
Hi. I was wondering where your most favorite place was that you visited while you were doing your show, and what was one of your favorite meals?
Oh, wow. What's my favorite child? I have to say, if I had to go back to one place in the world, it would be to Botswana. The Zintuwazi, who live in the Aha Hills outside of Kakai, about 5 hours airplane ride from Maun. It's probably the most remote place I've ever been. It's the same tribe that they made the movie in the 70s, The Gods Must Be Crazy.
Yep.
These are the Bushmen of the Kalahari. They are supermen, and I was lucky enough to have them take me to the watering hole where many anthropologists believe all of mankind walked out of at one point. My week that I spent with them was probably the best week of my life. It was miraculous. These people live as closely tethered to a natural existence as anything I've ever experienced. Every day we lived things with them that are still painted, that were painted on cave walls 30,000 years ago. That's an experience I'll never forget. And the best meal that I ever had is still the one that my wife makes for me every time I walk back to the door from 3 weeks away.
I love that. And weren't you tempted to like drop a Sprite bottle or something? And for
I was. You know, you think of all these fabulous gimmicky things in pre-production meetings, then you get out there and you're like, oh no, I can't do that.
Drop it just to see if they get a sequel out of The Gods Must Be Crazy.
Yeah. I write a lot about that experience, both the spiritual experience that I had with them at their trance dance, but also the food and the fun times we had with them in my book, The Bizarre Truth. It's a great read for people that are looking for an extra dose of the show. The book's fantastic.
Paula is in Janesville, Wisconsin, on Coast to Coast for Andrew Zimmern. Paula?
Yeah, hi, Andy.
Hi, Paula.
I got a rare, it might be a bizarre stew for you.
What's that?
It has microminerals that enhances the mental healing.
Mm-hmm.
Microminerals meaning what?
Well, I don't know exactly. I'm not a doctor. But I know that if you use heat, it brings it out in the stew.
Yeah.
Step 8, 9, and 12 in the 11th tradition.
Okay. I'm not sure what that means, but thank you, Paula. Let's do to Stephen in California, first-time caller line for Andrew Zimmern on Coast to Coast. Stephen?
Hi, Andrew. I was just wondering, which of the shows that you do, Bizarre Foods and Bizarre Worlds, which of them is your favorite that you're doing right now?
Oh,
and
gosh.
I have another question when you're done with that, too.
Yeah, Bizarre Foods. I mean, I love, you know, the original, you know, the classic M&Ms are still the best.
Right. So, but you're enjoying Bizarre Worlds, too.
Yeah, we are. You know, we did a whole season of those. Now we're back to doing Bizarre Foods. The network is, you know, not... You know, they're not doing an order for more Bizarre Worlds. I loved that show because I got to mix in a little more, a few more stories that, you know, ordinarily in Bizarre Foods are sort of outside of our purview. You know, I got to do, you know, you know, real Santeria in Cuba. I mean, I don't know how many other people get a chance to do that kind of thing.
I saw that episode. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, me too. So hopefully I'll get to do more of them.
Steven, you had a follow-up?
Yeah, would you ever consider bringing, like, normal people with you along for the experience?
We do, actually. And it's interesting that you say that. We had a
I like he says normal people. Yeah, it says, can you bring a normal person along with you? What category does that put you in?
We had a contest winner come with us on our Germany show. And you know, I'd like to have, you know, opportunities to take other people and sort of chronicle their experiences in these places that I'm going. The network's opinion is that viewers want to watch to see me and not to see other people. I'm not sure I agree with that 100%. I think a dose of other people would be nice every once in a while. The people at the networks, you know, not just the one I work for, really do listen to what their viewers are telling them. So if you're interested in seeing those kinds of things or experiencing those kind of things, you know, go to, you know, andrewzimmern.com and, you know, send us a note to the, you know, we forward it to the network, or go to travelchannel.com and tell them yourself. It's they listen to those things.
I like that. Josie is in Virginia, wildcard line for Andrew Zimmern.
Hello, everybody. Andrew, I wondered if you have been to Ghana, in the center of Ghana, I think it is, where they consume, and I don't know if it's in a broth or how they make it, but it's called Ibo for short, Ibo Tabernath. And by the way, the people at Hazleton should be using this because, and with your background, I thought you'd be especially interested in this. Apparently, after you, it goes into different pathways of the brain, and you don't want to do your addictive stuff anymore.
Oh,
detox,
I believe
yeah.
I believe in those kind of things, and because I've seen enough of them with traditional medicines practiced all over the world. We're planning to go to Ghana on this next season. Probably the most miraculous healing that I've ever seen in my life was practiced by the witch doctors in Botswana, or by some of the tribal peoples that I was with in the Amazon. When I was in the Amazon, I had a horrible burn on my arm, and I'm a veteran of the restaurant business. These things take months to heal, and they went to this. They took something called dragon's blood sap from a dragon's blood tree, and they rubbed it onto my arm, and in 2 days it was completely healed. You couldn't tell that I had a massive traumatic burn there. I've burned myself hundreds of times in my cooking career, and I've never had something heal in 2 or 3 days. It's always taken 30 or 40 days for a real burn to completely go away and heal over, no scab at all. It's amazing the things that you see when you're out there with native people. So I'm eager to get to Ghana. I'll look for it.
By the way, you can link up with Andrew Zimmern just by going to the webpage at Coast to Coast AM, and you can also go to Amazon for that book, which I haven't seen, so I'm looking forward to that. That sounds good.
Oh, Bizarre Truth, it's fantastic. It came out 8-9 months ago. It is I think it's a great read.
I would have plugged it. Let's get to Dennis in Maryland, east of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast for Andrew Zimmern. Dennis.
Hello. I wanted to say that this is awesome because my favorite radio show and my favorite television show have come together into one place.
To one massive beast.
But what I wanted to talk about was I actually use your television show as a tool to teach my kids about food because they're real picky when they go to eat. And we sit around the television set, we watch the show, and then they're more open to trying new things, which is a great thing, and I wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you. We actually hear that a lot, my friend. I'm the hugest demographic that was the biggest surprise to us at our production company and at the network was how many families watch the show together. And the best things I ever hear are from the families that come up to me whenever I'm doing appearances and stuff. And, they say, my kids start eating vegetables because I just told them, hey, what would Andrew Zimmern do? I think it's wonderful.
Well, thank you, Dennis. Go ahead.
You.
No problem. And then we have time for one last caller, I think, before we get to the top of the hour and we lose Andrew Zimmern for now. But I hope you make a comeback sometime. West of the Rockies, Arlene in California on Coast to Coast. Arlene?
Hi. Hi, Andrew. I love
Hello,
your show.
Thanks.
I wanted to ask you, I saw a show that you were in Asia and you had some durian.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like the worst fruit that you've ever had?
No, it's not the worst fruit. I've had some crazy little sapapilla type of things that are just gritty and, look like chocolate pudding and taste like, spoiled spinach that were worse than the durian. The problem with the durian, it's got a really nasty smell. And, in the pilot episode, I ate it and didn't like it. So now everywhere I go, everyone's always, pushing durian on me. The durian that's available in the United States is frozen whole, inside its husk. It's frozen to get rid of the little mites that live in this thick rind.
Oh, then I won't eat it.
So it lessens the horrific smell and the bad flavor by about a factor of about 400%. The stuff in Southeast Asia is lethal.
Yeah, I won't eat it if it doesn't have the mites. So
no,
that's probably why I won't have it. They're like sesame seeds. It just takes out the fun out of it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Arlene, and thank you, Andrew Zimmern. And I think you're doing something really important. And I think maybe even at a time when we see languages disappearing all over the world at the rate of like 4 a day, the last remaining person who's conversant in these obscure native languages, they wish they had a show like this that was capturing that culture. So this is time capsule stuff, and I think people will be looking at it literally for centuries. And I think you're doing something really cool.
So I appreciate it.
God bless you in everything you do. We look forward to watching more of both shows. If you can get the other one back on again, Andrew Zimmern, have a great night and hope the rest of the family is doing well, okay?
Give my best to your family. Take care, Ian.
We'll do that. Thank you, everybody. All right, coming up then at the top of the hour, we've got the Body Language Handbook. Gregory Hartley will explain how you can tell how people are lying, or rather, what's the truth that is trying to get out based on how they look at you and how they act. A former Army interrogator talks about that next on Coast to Coast.